Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks. You're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit a million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Hey, I'm Sarah Bivens.
And I'm Matthew Bivens.
And this is the Doing It at Home podcast, the only podcast dedicated to empowering, loving, and honest conversations around home birth. What started as a fun way for us to document our own home birth journey has turned into a platform for sharing birth stories, resources, and education with the goal of empowering mamas and families to make the birth decisions that work best for them.
Plus, we get into the antics, breakdowns, and breakthroughs of our own experience of marriage and parenthood.
All right. You ready, babe?
Yep. Let's do it, mama.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Doing It at Home podcast. Real quick, before we hop into today's birth story, just a few announcements for you. First of all, did you know that we are a podcasting family, essentially, here at the Bivens household? Yeah, so Matthew and I host Doing It at Home together, as you probably have already gathered. But Matthew has his own show as well called Having It All, and I have another show as well called Balance and Motherhood. So you can find those in Apple Podcasts, Google Play, pretty much any podcast player imaginable. You can find those shows. Matthew's show, Having It All, is a personal development experience and conversation that really doesn't even do it justice as to what this is and the brilliance that this man drops on the mic every single week, that he comes to you in your ear with something that you can take and implement into your life, and the concept of what it is to have it all being an abundant, loving life. So it is an amazing conversation, and I highly recommend you check that out. And then me, I'm hosting Balance and Motherhood, and you can kind of gather just by the title a little bit of what that might be about. But it's me bringing you two episodes a week, one a short little mantra for you, and then a deep dive into some sort of relevant topic around loving yourself and caring for yourself in motherhood, finding your own unique sense of balance, what that is, and to achieve that with some support, accountability, tools that I drop for you on the podcast. So go check those out, subscribe, drop some reviews in there, because if you love the energy and the conversation that we bring to Doing It at Home, you'll definitely enjoy those podcasts as well. And beyond those podcasts, we are balanced lifestyle coaches. So we work with individuals and groups on balanced lifestyle habits, mindsets, experience, and we bring it. Again, if you've experienced it on the show, that's what we do with our clients and our group settings. So go check out our websites as well. I'll drop links to those in the show notes, MatthewBivens.com and SarahBivens.com, to learn more. Okay, today's birth story is super exciting on multiple levels. First of all, it's the first time we've had a really close friend or loved one on the show telling their birth story, aside from our mamas, actually, now that I think about it, because we interviewed our own moms about our birth stories, if you haven't checked those out. But we speak to our friend Mimi, who has been in our circle and in our community of friends and loved ones for a number of years now, and it kind of just dawned on us to have her on the show, so that's what we did. And not only is it such an amazing story in the way that she tells it, and she is a beautiful human being in and of her own right, outside of being a close friend to us. But she brings really unique perspectives and ones that we haven't had on the show before. First off, it is a throwback retelling of a birth story because this birth took place in 1995. So this is 23 years later that Mimi is telling this story. And it is so vivid, you would think it happened yesterday. Also, Mimi was a 21-year-old PhD student at the time when she found out she was pregnant, a surprise pregnancy. So that, given her age, one of the younger mamas we've had on the show at the time of giving birth, she's not 21 anymore. But that, as well as being a single mom. So baby's father chose to not be a part of the picture. And so in the midst of the fears of being alone and not really knowing what to do, Mimi gained strength in the team she assembled around her, namely her mom and then a group of really powerful women who supported her through her process and transition into motherhood. This is an episode you do not want to miss. I promise you, you're going to want to re-listen to parts of it. You're going to want to share it. You're going to want to hang out with Mimi and learn more about her, which you can, because she is a yoga instructor and an instructor of yoga instructors. So she is a yogini, as well as just a beautiful mama, great friend, and we're so grateful to have her on the show. And I know you're going to love this episode. So here it is. Hi, Mimi.
Hey, Sarah. How's it going?
Awesome.
What's up, Matthew? Baby?
Hello. This is cool. We're excited to have you on the Doing It at Home podcast. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Me too. I'm so excited to be on your show.
Yeah. So listeners, fun fact, Mimi is a friend of ours and we've known Mimi now for like 5-6 years.
Six years.
And has been a part of our lives and community and all that great stuff. So we haven't had very many close people that we know on the show. And somehow, I mean, we've known you this long, Mimi, but this just popped up recently. We're like, oh my gosh, we need to have you on the show.
I know.
So here we are, but I'm glad it happened all in divine time.
I guess it doesn't help that I've been out of the country. So,
well, hey, you've been doing what you do. And I want you to share with listeners too what that is and who you are and what you do. So let them know. Share.
Okay, sure. So I am a yoga teacher and now I've gone international. So I'm an international yoga teacher of teachers. And I've been spending the last 2 years in various countries, mostly in India, but I dabble in teaching yoga teacher training courses in Italy and in France. And I have my own school and we teach courses in Indonesia. And so I've just been, you know, all over the place.
Yeah, just one or two places.
Just a couple here and there.
so cool.
My own version of Eat, Pray, Love.
Exactly.
And a yoga journey.
Oh, I love it. What would your three words be? What would the titles be?
It had something to do with sky, air, and grounding, because I think of yoga as the ethereal component. You know, I'm up in the air, I'm elevated in the clouds, and water. All of the yoga teacher training courses have been close to some source of water because I gravitate to water. And the grounding is like being centered for the teaching principle and being available for the students. So something like that. I haven't put the words around what it would be yet, but those three elements definitely inspire my journey.
That's awesome. Yeah. I like that. I totally put you on the spot and you rocked it. That's cool.
Thanks. I have been thinking about it, though. I've been like, what would be the name of my version of it?
Yeah.
Cool. So, Mimi, you bring a really awesome, interesting, multiple, I would say, perspectives to the conversation of home birth, but one of the things we really wanted to get you here on the show for is you yourself were born at home and then you had a home birth as well. And just the time frame, some of the circumstances around all of your life situations just make it such a rich, unique story that needed to be shared. So if you could just share a little bit of what you either probably don't remember necessarily of your birth, but maybe have been told or just details or things that you've been able to put together as far as why you were born at home, also when and where, and just, you know, fill in some of those details.
Okay. Yeah, no, I don't have any like real world, even though I was there, memory.
You don't remember your own birth, maybe that's
no,
crazy.
I don't. Try though I may, I just don't remember. But I do know it was in 1973, and I do know it was in New York City. So my dad is Nigerian, and he's what is called a Babalawo, which is a high priest of a sort. And so it's really, that's a whole lot of backstory that I don't have enough knowledge to talk about. But he was of the mindset that he would deliver all of his children at home. So a lot of people, it's the mom who is the deciding factor on that. She's going to have the child at the hospital, or she's going to have that at home, or in the car on the way to the hospital, or the baby. But in this case, my father had already premeditated that he would deliver all of his children at home. So here we are on 126th Street in this high rise, whatever those apartments are called. And my mom goes into labor, and my dad gives birth to me in this apartment on 126th Street in New York City. But I wasn't the first.
Okay.
He did the same thing. He delivered my older brother, and he delivered my younger brother, who you all know, Dey Adeoka, all in New York City, and my younger sister, KK, in New York City in this 126th Street apartment in New York City.
Wow.
Yeah, with his own two hands. So we were, he was the first person, human touch, that made contact with this body as I'm coming out of the birth canal. And the rest is history.
Wow.
He decided that he wanted to do this because of a lot of cultural reasons, you know, Babalawo and the spiritual aspect of that connection that you make with the child upon birth. And that influenced me a great deal as I grew in my decision to have a home birth when it was my turn to have a baby.
Yeah. So I was curious, even a little before that, growing up, you know, when you share lots of times kids, or as we're, you're young and you're sharing either your details of your birth or your parents or your family, were you sharing that you were born at home? And did you notice that that was not a common thing or not super popular, or did any conversation like that come up over the years?
As a kid, I don't think I really talked about it a lot. I mean, it would only come up very infrequently. Nobody was really having that kind of conversation. People would ask in general, so where were you born? And I would just say 126th Street, New York.
People just assume that was a hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
And occasionally in college, people would be like, oh, yeah, what hospital? And I'd be like, oh, not a hospital. And I'm 126th Street in the apartment. So the conversation would take on that kind of note, but not until like college years where, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, I've been to New York. What hospital?
Wow. Yeah. So then you said it influenced your own decision to have a home birth. Share a little bit about that. Or, you know, in your pregnancy, did you kind of always know you were going to do that? Or did some other things fall into place that supported you in it? What was the setup there?
I think I kind of always knew I was going to do that. But when I found myself pregnant, when it was that time for me, I think it was around 21. I want to say 21. My son was born in 95. In September. So he's 23 now. When I found out I was pregnant, I was alone. The father was not around, and he had made a decisive action that he wasn't going to be part of my life or the child's life. So it was my mom who was there. And so there was a lot of fear around it. I thought I would be supported by the male aspect of this life form I was bringing to life. But instead, it was my mother, who I couldn't, I wouldn't replace for the world, because she was much more powerful and influence in helping to raise my son in his early years. And there was a lot of fear for me because I didn't have him. And I was always used to seeing a mother and father with the way I was raised. My mom and my dad were both part of my life. I didn't know what to do in a scenario where there's no dad. But my mom was ever the vigilant rock for me and the supporter. And I was actually in graduate school at Baylor College of Medicine the day that the labor pains started. But even before that, when I found out I was pregnant, I had just started at the university. And, I thought I would, there were a lot of things that went through my mind. It was an unplanned pregnancy. I had no intention of having a baby. I didn't know what to do. And so my mom was my ever steady rock of Gibraltar, staying there by my side and counseling me. You know, I was working in a medical school in between classes because I was working on my doctorate in microbiology, microimmunobiology at the medical school there, Baylor College of Medicine. And my mom was like, you can't have a baby in the hospital. My mind had actually gone to having a baby in the hospital because I worked there.
Right.
Yeah.
She was like, no, Mimi, this is not your culture. You know, culturally, you have a baby at home. And I was like, but I don't know what to do. And all I had known for all that time that I was at university was all my classmates and, you know, students at the medical school and all of that. So I was like, where do I start? I didn't know where to start to look for a birthing mother or, you know, somebody to help me have the baby mm-hmm. or all these things. So I was completely lost without my mom. And my mom did all the research to find a doula who would help me give birth. And she kind of like started the ball rolling because I didn't know what the legalities were for having a home birth. And there's a lot of, you know, depending on the country or the state that you're living in, there's a lot of legal ramifications for having a home birth nowadays.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. I don't know how it is in Georgia. Is it like that here?
Georgia, as far as I know, and we'll fact check this, is it's legal to have a home birth. As far as the licensures and of midwives, depending on what type of midwife you are, that's seen as differently in certain parts. So, you know, the difference between a direct entry midwife or one that was a nurse midwife, those are kind of seen differently. And then in what ways those are, yeah, it just gets really muddy in state to state. Yeah.
And this was back in 95 and I was in Houston, Texas. So I don't think I even bothered to study what the law was once my mom had decided the fate.
Yeah,
it was done.
I was like, okay, let's just do this. And she was a nurse midwife. I'll always remember her. It was Rashida Mujtaba. And she was a licensed RN. And I don't know how my mom found her. But my mom found her and introduced her to me because I was studying. I was like, I don't have time for this, Mom. I got to go get that. So she did all the footwork for me. All I did was show up for the meeting and like, hi, nice to meet you. Oh, my mom was such a blessing throughout the whole process.
That's awesome. So then what was the prenatal care like for you then and any birth planning or kind of envisioning that you had, if any? Because, you know, you said you were kind of preoccupied with a lot of things going on, but were you putting anything into place as far as what you thought you might want to experience or how you saw that day going?
Yeah, I had always envisioned having a water birth, you know, like this idea of like giving birth to a baby in the water. So he's coming out like a fish and swimming on his but there was no tub and we didn't do the swimming pool tub, you know, and bring that into play or anything. I was a vegetarian at the time. And, so I had a very healthy regimen. My mom's a vegetarian. She was very influential in my life. I was 21. So I wouldn't say I was young, but definitely, the way our culture works is if the parents are in the household, then it's their household. So even though I was paying off bills, managing all finances, all this stuff, it was my mom's house. So, when she introduced me to the doula, the nurse midwife, Rashida put me on this regimen of prenatal vitamins because she's a, you know, registered nurse and all this stuff. And she told me how the birthing plan was going to go. After I had the baby, I would take it to a doctor who deals with home births and he would, you know, give him the birth certificate, check out his vitals and all of these things. So everything played out beautifully. And then she gave us a birth plan, like what we needed to get in place. We needed to sterilize the onesies and buy certain onesies and buy certain protectors for the mattress and, you know, those bed sheets that are plastic and stuff. And sterilize everything. And she taught us how to sterilize everything by putting it in paper bags and putting it in the oven and baking it. I don't know if you went through all of that, but it
was. Yeah, we didn't do that, but I've heard some of that technique. Yeah.
Yeah. And then washing certain things with alcohol and putting those aside. And we had all these things in place months before the baby was born. Not months, but, you know, a month or several weeks before the baby was born. Mm-hmm. But what I will always remember was how taken aback by the actual moment, like when it happened. And that memory is imprinted on my memory forever.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So why don't you walk us through birthday then, or what you, you know, can piece together as far as the sequence of it?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was bicycling and taking the bus to and from school every day. We were about 2 miles away from the campus. And I felt this lull in my energy, but I had a virology exam coming up. So I really felt like I needed to get to the lecture. So I went to class that day. This day I was so like tired. I didn't feel like riding the bicycle. So I took the bus. And I remember getting off of the bus and my energy just kept going lower and lower and lower. And my mom called on my cell phone and she was like, Mimi, how's it going when you come home? You know, I wanted to talk to you about something having to do with preparing for birth, because by this time my belly had popped out, you know, like the turkey's done.
Yeah, yeah.
So my mom knew all the signs, but I wasn't like 100% on all the signs. And so she was talking to me on the phone following my class and she was like, Mimi. So, and I was like, Mom, hold on a second. And then she was like, what was that? I said, I don't know. I just, she goes, what are you doing? I said, I don't know, Mom. Just give me a second. She goes, Mimi, describe what's going on. I said, I keep having this little pain and it's just like gas bubbles or something. She goes, count how long between each of those gas bubbles. And I was like, oh, what do you mean? And she goes, those might be contractions. I was like, I don't know, Mom.
Yeah.
Time them. So I was like, oh my God, I'm in labor. I had no idea. So here I am walking across the campus now and they're happening like every like 5 minutes. And I'm like, oh. And my energy keeps on depleting to the point where I feel like I'm almost having to crawl across the campus. And all I keep thinking is, Mimi, just make it to the bus stop. Just make it to the bus stop. So I make it to the bus stop and I sit down and it's actual labor pains. And the whole time I'm on the phone with my mom, and I'm like, Mom, I don't know what to do. I don't have any energy. She's just like, just get on the bus, Mimi. Just get on the bus. So I drag myself. I'm like doing everything I can not to crawl and get on my knees and crawl, but I'm so slouched over. My hands are so close to the ground. I just really want to crawl, but I'm like, I will keep walking, keep one foot in front of the other. So I get on the bus, I make it on the bus, and the bus driver is like empathizing with me, like, hey, are you okay? And I'm like, I think I might be in labor. And he's like, okay, we'll get you home. So it's like a 30-minute bus ride. I finally get home. It's the public bus. It's not like a thing. It's a public bus. They get me home and my mom is there to greet me. And I just fall right into her arms. I'm like, Mom, I have no energy. And she like drag pulls me into the house and she sits me down and she starts giving me liquids like orange juice and watermelon juice. And I start drinking the juices and I'm like, oh, this is so helpful. So mind you, this is all around like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe earlier in the day. And so she starts hydrating me because I had gotten dehydrated in the whole process. I hadn't eaten anything because I didn't have any energy to do that. I just had enough energy to get back on the bus after that class. So I'm at home and my friends start calling me from school. And nobody, up until like the 7th month of my pregnancy, nobody knew I was pregnant because I was walking and bicycling to and from school every day. So there was nowhere for the weight to land. So I wasn't getting big. It just popped out all of a sudden in the 9th month. And they're like, hey, what's that? And I'm like, oh, I'm pregnant. And they're like, what?
Surprise.
Surprise. When is it due? Oh, in a couple of weeks.
Oh, wow.
So my friends start calling me, hey, Mimi, what are you doing? Because I think it's close to the weekend around this time. And they're like wanting to get together to study for the upcoming exam. So I'm like, oh, I think I'm going into labor. And they're like, what? Yeah. They're like, are you going to the hospital? I'm like, no, I'm having it right here. And they're like, oh my God, can we come? Because they're medical students and PhD students. So I was like, sure, come on over. Because wow. Many of them were going through that in their classes, you know, learning how to deliver babies. So I started inviting some of my friends over. One of them, Elena James, is a medical MD, PhD student at the time. And then Reva had already had two children. So she was an MD student and she came over because we were all getting ready to study this at the time. So this is like, this was on a Sunday. I just looked it up, Sunday. So they come over and we start talking and they're like, can I bring anything? And they start bringing over juice and stuff like that. And it's like the getting later in the day, maybe around 7 or 8 o'clock. And another friend of mine calls me up. Her name is Raquel Bone. And she was a business student. She wasn't even related to the medical field, but I knew her from New Mexico State. And we had connected in Houston. And she had another friend who had never seen the whole birthing process. And she was like, hey, can we come over? Because I think we were supposed to go out that night or something. So now it's my mom. We called the midwife and Rashida was there. Elena, Reva, the medical student, classmates, Raquel, and her friend. So there were all these women there. And I had never anticipated anything like this. But the curiosity of the scientific mind was there with my classmates. And then just because my friends are just supposed to come over and we're supposed to hang out, it was just, they were meant to be there. So I called it the gathering of the Ajahs. And in Yoruba, Aja has three different definitions depending on how you pronounce it. So it's A-J-A, three letters, Aja. It can mean dog, it can mean open, or it can mean witches. And my dad is a Babalao. And in our culture, like a witch has the symbolism of being a healer or something like that. Mm-hmm. So here I have all these healing energy all around me just spontaneously. So I was like, in my mind, it imprinted as the gathering of the Ajahs.
Wow. I love that.
That's how I'll always remember it. So there I am. They're all bringing over juices and stuff. And I'm like rubbing my belly, like feeling so constipated, like I have to take a really serious dump, but it won't come out. And I'm like, ooh, ooh. My nurse midwife is like, stop pushing until it's time. Mm. So I'm like, when is it going to be time? So I start jumping up and down. And I turned on, at the time, my favorite artist was Seal. So I turned on Bring It On from Seal. And you can look up the song. It's one of my favorite songs to this day. And Seal starts singing, bring it on, bring it on. Don't wait until tomorrow. So I start singing this to my belly. I'm like, come on out. It's time. And he still doesn't budge. So by now the pains are intensifying. My friends, if you ask any of my friends who had attended the birthing, they would say I was dancing all night long. But I don't remember dancing. I just remember jumping up and down trying to get it out. I'm like, come out, wherever you are. So I was cutting cantaloupe and cutting watermelon for everybody and pouring juice. And we were all just talking. It was like a party. So finally, the pain just got too much. And I just got so exhausted from all of this. And they were all in the living room. And I just was like, Mom, I don't have any energy anymore. I don't know if I'm going to be able to push when it's time to push. And she was just like, take a break. Because I had been standing this whole time. So it was like from 2 o'clock in the afternoon to like 8 or 9 or something at night. And I was just like trying to stay vertical so the baby could have gravity pull it out or something. And he just wasn't coming. So she was like, go take a rest. And Rashida said, you know, we can always do an epidural. It's not too late for us to induce. And I had wanted to do a completely natural. So I said, no epidural. So my mom drew me a hot bath. I said, make it as hot as you can make it. Because by this time, I didn't feel anything except for pain. And I was like, I want something other than pain right now. So I wanted the heat to take my mind off it. So I stayed in this hot bath until it started getting cold. And it was around 11 o'clock or so. And I was like, what if I didn't know if the water broke or not, because I had been in the water for like 2 hours. I was like, what if, and because I felt something weird going on down there by 11 or so at night. And I was like, what if? And Rashida was sitting by the bathtub with me with her hand in the water, holding my hand and stroking my belly. And she goes, what if what? I said, what if he's coming now? She goes, no, I don't think he's coming. You would know. And I stuck my fingers in my vagina. I put three fingers in there. And I was like, this feels weird. So I was like, no, I think he's coming. She goes, no, you would know. I said, no, I think he's coming. And so she did the same thing. She was like, oh, it's his head. Oh, wow. So it was almost a water birth. She goes, we got to get you out of the water because it wasn't clean. I had been in it for like 2 hours. So he just started slipping his way out. And I was like, yay. But he didn't come out. So they moved me over to the bed. And then the pain hit. Because mind you, the warm water had dulled sensation of the pain radiating through my body. And they moved me over to the bed. And I was like, oh, my God, this really, really hurts. And it hurt so bad, I started holding my breath. And then they started saying, push, push, push. And so I was holding my breath. I'm pushing. They were like, you need to breathe, too. I said, what do you want me to do? Push or breathe. Like, you're confusing me. So by now, all of my classmates and my friends were in the room. Reva was holding my hand. She's like, just breathe, Mimi. Just breathe, Mimi. And she kept trying to tell me to breathe. And I was like, I am breathing through clenched teeth. And she goes, no, you're not. And then we started getting into this argument that I was breathing. And my nurse midwife was like, focus on what you're doing, Mimi. And I was like, okay, okay, okay. And I was like, okay, I'm breathing. I'm breathing. So I was like telling myself out loud, I'm breathing. I'm breathing. And then I would hold my breath and I would clench my teeth whenever she would say, it's time to push. I was like, can I push now? Can I push now? Because she kept on saying, hold on, don't push yet. Don't push yet. And I was like, can I push? Can I push? She's like, just hold on, hold on. I'm holding on. I'm holding on. Can I push now? And she's like, okay, push. And so I'd bear down and I'd hold my breath and they'd be like, breathe. And I'd be like, I'm trying to push. Wow. I don't need to breathe right now. I'm trying to push. So finally, I think about 3 hours into it, it was like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. I was like, I can't do this anymore. He's not coming. Can you do the epidural now? And they're like, no, honey, it's too late for that. I was like, oh, this hurts. So Rashida had gotten down there and started putting on like coconut oil and castor oil because I had started tearing and that's where the pain was coming from. And so she was trying to massage it so that it got lubricated enough to open up. And it was painful. It was like, I felt like I was being ripped open. And it was at the end of it, when he finally came out, it was like this tiny little, like 2 centimeter tear.
Right.
I felt like the whole Grand Canyon had just ripped me open. And it was just this tiny little 2 centimeter, not even 2 centimeters. It was like nothing, but it was so painful. All of my awareness was right there at that spot. Mm. But I remember all the noise and everybody saying, push and you got this and breathe, coaching me through it. And I love him for life for all of that, helping me, you know, bring him into the world. And then when he finally came out, there was just this ethereal silence. It was just like nothing. Everything was peaceful. And I know that this is when all of my DMT was in my system. I was like in love with everybody, in love with the world. And he was so quiet. I was like, is he out? They're like, yeah, he's out. And there was this hush that befell the room. Mind you, there was like 6 of us in the room. But at that time, it would have seemed like the whole house was quiet. It was so peaceful. And then I heard him. And Rashida laid him on my belly. And he was so quiet. You know, he wasn't a big crier or anything. It was just like a little squeak. And this sense of looking around, my mom was the first person to like make eye contact with him when he opened his eyes. And he started looking at everybody and it was a sense of, no, you don't quite seem familiar to me. No, not you. And then when the midwife laid him on my stomach, he looked at me and he was like, yeah, that's who I was looking for.
Wow.
And he closed his eyes and he just fell asleep on my belly. And it was like love at first sight.
Wow.
Wow, Mimi.
I told him, welcome to the world. First words to him. You are supported on your journey.
That's so cool. And is it early morning at this point?
Oh, it was 5:34 a.m.
So the world was quiet as well.
The world was quiet. I was the only one making noise.
Yeah.
That was what they thought was going on that night. Yeah, 5:34. That was a long, I think it was 24 and a half hours of labor. It was a long day because my mom suspected I was going into labor as I was going to class.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if I had class or if I had something to do in preparation for the upcoming test. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
That was just a you told that story so beautifully. Like, it was so vivid. Yeah. I feel like I was with you along it. Like, I could, you know, it's like when you read a really amazing book that then you have the full vision of what the places look like, what the people look like, and just the description that you had of this, you would not think this was 23 years ago.
Yeah. It's the biggest, most important thing that has ever happened to me in my whole life. Wow. That was like that moment. Mm-hmm. I can pinpoint all the details of it. I was embedded, firmly impressed on my brain. Mm. I'll never forget it.
So share a little bit of what happened after Adeyemi came out and was asleep on your chest, and you know the room is quiet. What did your friends do, and the other students in there? Did they stick around for a while? What were the midwives doing?
Well, I have to be honest with you. After all of that, I barely had any energy. I didn't think I'd be able to push anymore because I was just like ready to pass out during the pregnancy, during the labor. I think I passed out. Mm. At that moment, that was that everything probably went blank and everybody just disappeared. Disappeared from my consciousness because I was gone. I just remember that two hearts syncing up as they had in the womb and just holding my child. I think my mom handled everything. There might have been some words passed, you know, the nurse midwife telling me what's next and through dazed eyes and just, you know, lost in love with my baby on my chest, you know. I'd just be making things up if I tried to tell you what happened.
Right.
Yeah. None of it mattered. Yeah.
Disappeared after that. Yeah. They weren't there the next day. But I will say this. I couldn't let him go. I held him as long as I could hold him, even into sleep. And it was my mom who was like, you need not sleep with the child because you need to put some protective barriers around them because if you're so exhausted, you might roll on the baby. You know, all the little details that you don't think about, you know. Like it has happened where parents have newborn child and they sleep with them and they're so exhausted they roll onto the baby. You know, those kinds of stories, or the baby rolls off of the bed. So my mom was handling all the details of things that I wasn't even thinking about. And I remember at one point after the baby was born, I had to go to the bathroom. And I'll always remember this too. I have this spry jump out of bed kind of thing. I've done it since I was a kid. I still do it today. I jump right out of the bed. And the energy was there to do it, like to make a dash to the bathroom. But I had forgotten about the episiotomy. I totally forgot. I had torn myself open like the Grand Canyon. And so I moved to jump out of the bed and the whole world came crashing down on me. Pain. I was like, oh my God, what is that horrible pain? It was so bad. Oh, I think I even forgot about the afterbirth. There was the afterbirth.
And right.
And that was painful. And I was like, does the pain never stop? I thought at some point through the whole labor process, at each point in the last 23 years, I kept on thinking to myself, okay, this is the end of the pain. But at 2 years old, there was more pain. At 13 years old, having a child is like, I just got used to there being pain throughout the rest of my life. Because there's things that happen where there's the physical pain and then there's the heart pain associated with the child hurting themselves for the first time in a way that you never thought was imaginable, or the child having an experience, or the child pulling away, or the child going through, you know, so all these pains are new, different kinds of pains manifesting themselves. It all started with the episiotomy and labor.
Right.
But going to the bathroom for the first time after childbirth, that was the worst. Little details that I remember.
Right, little things. Yeah, just like, the little things.
As a man, like I can't even imagine.
You're sitting here like, what? You just go.
I'm not even thinking that. I'm thinking that just must feel. I don't know what it would even feel like.
Yeah.
People have tried to describe it as a watermelon, trying to push a watermelon out of the penis hole. And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. A little different.
The visual in my head is like one of those snakes that swallows an egg. And you just see the egg and its throat going. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. It just makes its way through the coils of a snake.
That's the visual I have when you say a watermelon traveling through a penis.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, like that. It's just like impossible to conceive of.
I'm curious, Mimi, when you, if you have conversations, you know, in your life currently or any recently, you know, with other women or with mamas who are preparing or are considering their birth options, you know, what are some of the things that you would share or recommend with someone who's considering home birth? Or what would you see as some of the great benefits of it, or, you know, as it helped you, or, you know, any and all of that, to just what you would kind of share with someone listening who might be, you know, on their own journey, either preparing for conception or birth process and beyond?
I remember regrouping with my classmates after my son was born. And I remember the conversations that ensued around having a hospital birth. You know, we were all in some form or fashion connected to the university hospital. And some of the jokes that would go around about going in from the top, you know, medical doctors nowadays, they structure the birth around their schedule. Mm-hmm. And know that more and more doctors are being more inclusive of what the parent wants. And even hospitals are designing rooms for birthing rooms, so they could adhere to the parent's standard for giving birth naturally. But the medical practice is just that. It's a practice, and they are practicing. And when I was in medical school, there was a quota the students needed to get in order to pass a gynecology or obstetrics, I forget which one it was, of cesarean sections. Mm. And it's a practice. And so they needed a certain number. So it's a medical school teaching hospital. So whether or not the parent wanted to have it by natural birth or by cesarean was not really 100% in the parent's hands, because students needed the practice. So oftentimes they were converting vaginal births over to cesareans so that the students could get practice. And there are a lot of jokes that were passed between me and my medical school friends. They were saying things like, yeah, we're going in from the top. There's a certain level of insensitivity that the practitioners had as students, for sure. But I know a lot of that was what they learned from their teachers, who were actual practicing doctors. So having the behind the scenes look at what the medical practice, how the medical practice looks at giving birth, gave me assurance that what I did was the right way. For me, my experience was holistic. It was loving. It was according to my will, my wants, what I wanted. There was no drugs introduced into the baby's system when he was born. He wasn't shocked by bright lights and loud sounds of the beeping monitors and, you know, noises of doctors and nurses going and treating a childbirth like it was a medical emergency. He was surrounded by love and mm-hmm. comfort of his own home. And so there's so many benefits that whenever people are contemplating home birth or hospital birth, I keep on emphasizing the need to have a home birth. I mean, we need to bring it back to, it's not a medical condition. It's not a disease state that needs to be treated. And so honor that. And there's something different, something spiritual, something transcendental that happens with that connection that mom makes with baby when they have that environment that's supported for birthing versus treating a medical condition in the hospitals.
Yeah.
That was beautifully put. Mm-hmm. That was awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, Mimi, you're amazing. I appreciate you so much just sharing this with us and hanging out with us today.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Sometimes during these interviews, I'll write little notes to Sarah about something, like a question I want to ask or something. And I'm looking at it right now on my screen. I wrote, "This is great," with an exclamation point, because I really enjoyed hearing you share your story. You know, we've known you for so long, and I've had the pleasure of meeting your son. He's an awesome guy. And just you sharing the story gives me more insight into you, into who you are and who you are as a woman and a mother and just a powerhouse. And like Sarah said earlier, the way you shared the story, I was right there with you. I was one of those students in the room. I felt like I was right there on the bus with you. And
you were one of the witches.
Yes.
Welcome to the Ajaz.
Yes. And so this really was great. So thank you so much, Mimi.
You're welcome. I feel so honored to have been asked to be on the show. I remember the story in such detail, but I'm not often asked, you know, what was your birthing story?
I know. Yeah. Not many women are. So I'm glad that we could do this.
I mean, it's been 23 years. Yeah. You wouldn't expect me to still remember. I'm like, oh, I still remember.
That's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. Yes, and a true testament to how impactful the experience is and how important these stories are. Yeah. We love you, Mimi.
I love you too. Thank you.
Quick note about the Doing It at Home podcast. Matthew and I are not doctors or medical professionals, and nothing we say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. If you have medical or health-related questions, please take them to a trained professional. We're here simply to entertain you with stories and conversations about pregnancy, birth, and parenthood.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad-approved. Dadages. Hi there, I'm Chad Higley. If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.